Kabam. There we go.
Excellent.
All right, look at that. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Aaron Flores, and with me in the studio is the none other. The one, the only, Tim Mooney. Tim Mooney, how's it going?
I think there is another Tim Mooney out there. I think he owns a Ford dealership in Illinois. I think he's the number one Tim Mooney on Google.
So this is the Tim Mooney that does not want to get you into a used Ford.
No. I would like you not to be in a used Ford. No offense, Ford Motor Company.
They can take it.
Just in case they want to be a sponsor of the Sprocket Podcast. No.
Right.
I don't want to ruin things for you guys.
Hi, I'm Aaron Flores from the Sprocket Podcast. When I'm done talking about simplifying the good life and living a car-free lifestyle and riding my bicycle, I like to drive a Ford motor car.
Ford Motor Company is a wonderful corporation that thinks about you, the driver.
Ka-ching! There's those dollars.
I think we should just submit a proposal right now for you guys.
Who needs integrity, right? So today we've got something kind of special here. We're going to do a crossover episode with Tim's new podcast, Pedal Shift.
Pedal Shift Project. I don't know why I decided not to include the word podcast in my podcast. Maybe it's, you know, sort of it's a dodgy thing, but the word podcast does not appear in the name of my podcast. But it's about bike touring lifestyle, and I know that you are doing a lot with bike touring, kind of. You're sort of new to it, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
In that episode, you can come over to pedalshift.net, and it'll be episode 004. And I don't know why I decided to go with two zeros in front of the
episode. Cool. I was really wishing I would be your seventh episode.
Well, that's the thing. Someone very special gets to be the Bond episode in 007, yes.
You got to do like a spy theme for that, right?
Exactly. I think there were other 00s, though. So being 004 means, you know, you died a horrific death in one of the movies.
That's true.
Like in the first 20 minutes of one of the Bond movies, Agent 004 probably died, maybe at the hands of Jaws or one of those other good 70s era Roger Moore villains.
So long as it wasn't Oddjob. That's just embarrassing.
You know, if I had to pick one Bond villain to go from, I think Oddjob would be the one I'd pick.
Wait, which one is the one with the hat?
That's Oddjob.
Oh, okay. I mean, he's not so bad.
I mean, if I have to go, I think I want to go from a very large Korean man with a razor-bladed hat.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Well, who's the guy that was played by...
Hervé Villechaize?
Yes.
Oh, that was in Man with the Golden Gun.
I thought that was Oddjob.
Scaramanga was the name of the bad guy.
Yes.
But Hervé
That's such
Villechaize,
a great name, too, for
Welcome
a
to the
villain.
Movies of Bond podcast, where we're simplifying the good life and talking about Hervé Villechaize.
That's right.
Acting legend Hervé Villechaize.
And right now, everybody's like going to their computer, like putting up like IMDb, Hervé Villechaize, who is this?
Yeah, tweet.
That's Tattoo.
Tweet the answer to Sprocket Podcast.
That is Tattoo from Fantasy Island.
We'll just call him Tattoo. Although he probably, actually, didn't he take his life because people were, his own, like, he was really bummed that people always called him Tattoo. And I think that,
oh, really?
At least that's the urban legend.
Oh, that's, so wow, now I feel bad. Oh, hey, look at that. It's time for headlines.
There we go.
I'm just kidding.
Headlines, Hervé Villechaize.
No Hervé Villechaize took his... Wow.
Yeah,
oh,
it's kind of sad.
Too bad.
I liked him. I mean, he was part of my childhood. But.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
I would like fantasize that one day he would get to be like Batman.
As I recall, Fantasy Island was on late, like 10 o'clock Saturday nights, and you could tell that it was going to be a scary episode because I was a kid at the time and everything scared me. If Rourke said, it could be very dangerous... If he said that, you knew that it was going to be some kind of a cave and there was going to be danger and it was going to be scary. If work, and I would turn it off. I would avoid those episodes.
Oh, like, God, like, they got a cave. Turn it off.
There's a cave with a demon bear in it because of one of the fantasies gone wrong involves a demon bear, and Rourke knows that's happening. But if you get one of the good episodes, the Sunshine and Bunnies episode where Rourke doesn't say that, then you're in, you're good.
So I have zero memory of any Fantasy Island episodes.
I think I just made it up for you.
Oh, there you go. Other than I know we watched it. I know I was really young, so I probably didn't last much longer than the intro, but I do remember like the plane, like all the time.
Every episode.
very vivid, you know,
yeah.
Memories of that.
And he was great. He was Hervé Villechaize. He was comedic. He was serious. He had he was great. I liked him. Hervé Villechaize fan club of two in this room here.
Would you say he carved the way for Peter Dinklage? Is that his name?
Dinklage is awesome though.
Yes.
Are you a Game of Thrones watcher?
Off and on. I'm not a follower.
This is a long story, but so when I was a kid, I got into Dungeons and Dragons, and it basically ruined my social life for at least 10 years going through high school. And so I had a bad attitude towards the fantasy genre for a long time at some point I decided I wanted to meet girls more than I wanted to roll my 20-sided die.
Those two are like dialectically opposite.
Sadly, yes, as I discovered.
Yes.
So I had a bad attitude towards E. Gary Gygax, the inventor of Dungeons and Dragons, and the fantasy genre as a whole. So I eschewed this whole thing. And then I'm in Montreal, a buddy of mine, he's a musician up there, and you know we listen to all this great music and stuff like that, and he goes, hey, season one, Game of Thrones, you with me? And I'm like, not really, but all right, if you really want, fine. And then I watched the entire season one on the train back to DC, and I was full on in, so yeah, nerd alert, everyone.
Yeah, yeah, well, so here's the thing, like, there's this, it was kind of like the nerd crossover for... Well, like, that whole year was sort of the nerd crossover, right? Because, like, Harry Potter had just ended.
Yeah.
So we've sort of indoctrinated these children into nerddom.
Yes. They like to call it fantasy and creativity, but nerddom's good.
That's what I grew back in my day.
Yeah. We didn't call it that in
we
my
kicked
day.
Their asses. that was me. I also played Dungeons and Dragons. But no, I had the same sort of reaction when that came out. Other than the fact of, I was like, why is this on HBO? This is such a nerdy thing. Like, to me, all of the like fantasy types of series that were coming out, you know, when I was growing up, Xena, Warrior Princess, Hercules, you know, those were like Sunday afternoon kind of one-off.
And they were campy, too. They were the old Batman show. They were meant to be campy. You weren't supposed to take it seriously. And this show's serious as a heart attack. I mean, I'm telling you.
Yeah, but that's not what I was thinking originally. It was like, oh, God, like... Xena, Warrior Princess, all over again.
I mean, I've seen some things I can't unsee on the show.
And
I'm not even talking about Alessandra's, well, you know.
The nudity is actually quite tame by comparison to some of the other things that happens on there.
There are some things, I mean, there's just some horrific levels of violence. And it's funny because at first I was really turned off by it because I heard about this kind of stuff ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was... misogynistic, quite frankly, how women were treated. And then I've also it's balanced, if you will. I'm not sure you can balance misogyny, but I mean, there are very strong, important main female characters that are very well written with good dialogue that doesn't feel like
it's not like they just took a male's part and cast a female.
Exactly. And I think that I found out later that one of the main screenwriters for the show is David Benioff. And if any of you have never read The 25th Hour by David Benioff, it was his first novel. And then it was later made into a Spike Lee movie, which more people know
really?
About, which it was excellent. But the book is one of my favorite, one of the best American novels, in my opinion, of the last 25 years. It is fantastic. And he writes the show. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that trivia, he is the husband of Amanda Peet, a very fine actress in her own right. So
yes, she is.
We all come to the Sprocket Podcast to learn things like Hervé Villechaize and Peter Dinklage. Yes.
Well, hey, we should probably talk about like some bikes and stuff.
Simple life bikes, things that the podcast is actually about. Yes.
I wanted to ask you right off the bat about getting flooded out because that was such a great video to watch. I was in Florida when... you posted that to us.
Yes.
So I was, I guess, fortunate enough to like share that with the rest of my family. He's like, I know this guy. Check out what happened.
That's awesome. It's funny because I put it out. I'm Well, backstory. All right. So I live in the Washington, D.C. area. I live in Washington, D.C., which I suppose is the same as the area. But anyways, the Chesapeake and Ohio Trail is one of the golden jewels of bike touring. It is a trail that goes from Washington, D.C. to Cumberland, Maryland, 180 miles long. You can hook up with another trail there and go to Pittsburgh, all car free. It's amazing. People come from all around the world to do this route. I have it in my backyard. I go camping on it all the time. It was early in the season, and I've been just dying to get out there. I mean, I love going out there and camping. There's hiker-biker spots. They're free. It's just great. It's right on the Potomac River. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
So it's a way to get a pretty decent, like, outdoor vacation 100%. Without having to spend a lot of money.
It's your bike and whatever gear you want, and it's what got me into bike touring, really.
Right on.
So this spring I'm excited. We had a horrible winter. If you're on the East Coast at all, you can commiserate with me. We just had a brutal winter. A lot of places had a brutal winter. And I was ready. I went out, and a couple days before, there were some big, big thunderstorms up and down the East Coast in the Appalachian Mountains. And of course that feeds into the Potomac. And you know, I know the river. I know it's one of those things. It's going to come down the river. There were flood watches, and I go on the NPS website. They don't say anything about closures. I'm like, good, I'm gone. I go. And I get there, and I start looking at Twitter, and Twitter's talking about up in Harper's Ferry, which, you know, famous, the confluence of Shenandoah and the Potomac Rivers.
Yeah.
John Brown, all that. There's a national park
there. John Brown's body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they have a Twitter feed, and they're talking about going 10 feet above flood stage. It's going to be a long night. And I'm sitting there going, that's about 20 river miles up from where I'm at right now. So I get out of my tent. It's like 11:30 at night, right? And I go out and I sort of like peek down towards the river. It's like, it's about 20 feet from the bank there. And I look down and it's moving. I mean, it's just moving. And there's like big full trees going by. And I'm sitting there going, seriously considering leaving at midnight in pitch black, because yeah. I'm like, okay, something's going to happen. And then I'm like, dude, over there, just over there.
Yeah, this was the key thing in your video, right?
There are two enormous pieces of earth-moving equipment. And I'm like, surely the National Park Service is not going to leave these multi-thousand dollar vehicles.
Surely.
Surely they would not do that. Surely they would not risk such a thing. Surely they would tell us if there were flood problems, you know, in hiker-biker camps that are 10 freaking feet from the Potomac River. So fast forward to the next morning. And if you haven't seen the video, we'll probably put a link to it in the show notes again. But it's only a few minutes long, and you can kind of see what my reaction was to it. But I'll tell you the lead up to it. I open my eyes, the sun's out. It's sometime after 6:30 or something like that in the morning, maybe closer to 7. At that point in the year, sun was coming up a little bit later. And there are just an enormous number of insects. Enormous number of insects.
Really?
Between my tent and my fly. You know, I've got one of those cool tents that's all mesh, basically, or, you know, no-see-em kind of stuff.
Right.
And so there's centipedes and millipedes and flying bugs and everything. And I'm sitting there going,
man.
Well, I know it's a little muggy out, but that just seems a little peculiar.
Yeah.
And then I sort of roll down and I put my hand down on the tent floor. And the only way I can describe this, it's dry inside the tent,
right?
But I push down on it, and it's like a waterbed. And I'm sitting there going, after knowing all the things that had happened, I woke up thinking, oh, I'm fine. And then I see the bugs, and then I get the waterbed thing, and I realize I'm basically in
the water. Yeah.
And so I zip open the tent, and I look around, and I'm like, oh, I'm so fucked. I was just like, I have no idea what's going on here. I don't know if there's like a torrent of water, you know.
Right.
I think we've all seen those movies with like, you know, tsunamis and stuff. You know,
sure.
I have no idea when this started or when it was going to end. And
if your tent's just, you know, like maybe you're not even in the same place.
I
where
could
you
be
were.
In Baltimore for all I know, just
right.
floating down the street, you know. But in the end, I decided it once I got out of the tent and I looked around and I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I would really like to document this immediately. So I pulled out my trusty iPhone and I shot it all. And I got some really wild shots of how I got out, what it looked like. You know, talking in the middle of one, and then all of a sudden a freaking fish jumps out of the water over my shoulder and you see the splash and, you know, my reaction to that.
Yeah.
It was such a weird, surreal moment. And I mean, who gets flooded in the middle of a camping trip? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but I mean, I didn't think this was going to happen to me, but it was fun, and it's a fun little video, and obviously I made it, so spoiler alert,
you're still alive.
But it's a good story, and I'm glad I documented it because it's a fun thing to share. And I mean, how many? I don't know. This year, I've been cursed on my bike tours, anyways.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, there was that.
Oh, that's right. That was like one of the things you said on this video was like, this proves that this tour is cursed.
This tour is cursed. And then the next one that I tried to do the whole trail with a buddy of mine. If you've read my stuff or been on Pedal Shift, it's Mysterious James or MJ, and I went on a trip from Pittsburgh. Allegedly all the way back to DC, but I just had horrific mechanicals and I had to call it in the middle of it. So I had two bad things in a row. And now this tour that I'm about to go on was supposed to be going out towards, you know, Montana, North Dakota. I've never been to North Dakota. I was really excited. I'm a Teddy Roosevelt fan. I was going to go see his old, you know, ranch land, all this. And then I look at the weather the other day and it's like 109 degrees. And I'm just like, no. Yeah. And so, I feel like my bike tours have been a little cursed this year, but it's all good. It's all good. I mean, that's part of the deal, isn't it? You know,
right. And because of this, you're headed up to Victoria.
Yeah. So I'm switching it up, and on episode 004 of Pedal Shift Project, I'm going to talk a little bit more about my decision making on that. But I'm going to be going up to Victoria. I'm going to take I've got family in Seattle, visit my cousin up there for a day, then take the ferry up to Victoria. And then I'm going to do the kind of classic adventure cycling route down from Victoria, cross over to Anacortes, and then I'm going to do the interior route to go.
Okay.
So I'll go through Aberdeen and then eventually get into and go down. I'm a huge Nirvana fan, so I'm sort of thinking of being that guy and going to Cobain's house or something like that. I mean, come on. I mean, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll shame myself into not doing that.
I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast or not, but while I was in Seattle, I took some time. I went to Bruce Lee's grave.
Oh, see, that's pretty cool, though.
And like Bruce Lee and Brandon Lee are like buried
They're right next to each other.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, really nice stones, gravestones and some neat engraving on there.
Seattle's got some interesting stuff going on. I just read a Jimi Hendrix biography, and I didn't know a thing about Jimi Hendrix other than A, he was awesome.
Yeah.
B, made great music, and C, was born in Seattle. But I learned a lot about sort of who he was from based on where he was from. I mean, he really was quintessentially Northwest from a different way than we're used to hearing. Right. And it was a really cool book. I can't remember. I wish I could remember. I could plug that book, but it was very good.
Jimi Hendrix biography. It'll do all right on its own.
Right. Yes. It needs some Sprocket podcast and Pedal Shift love to boost the numbers.
Well,
the
once we get Ford behind us, you know, well, then everybody's going to be climbing.
Dude, they're already behind us. It's happening.
So right now you're here in Portland. Like we said, you're headed up to Victoria.
Yeah, and I'm doing the whole classic kind of West Coast thing, and I'm going to do the Lost Coast as well, which I'm really excited about. Have you done? I know you were in Big Sur.
We did not do Lost Coast. No.
So we
trained it to San Fran, and then just went south from there. And the Lost Coast, I think
it's further south.
No,
oh, I'm sorry, it's further
north.
You're right. The good news is you don't miss the Redwood area, which is one of my favorite parts. Burlington Campground. That's my favorite. It's nestled. I mean, it's so classic. It feels like Smokey Bear is going to come out from around the corner and just give you a big hug and just, you know, and admonish you not to, you know, play with matches and stuff. I mean, it's just so transcendently beautiful. You're rocking it with some RVs and stuff, but still you're on this amazing road, the Avenue of the Giants, and it's perfectly
shaded.
You have
these like trees that are as wide as this room. And
first time I ever biked it was a few years ago, and it was the first day of a 5-day bike tour from just north of there to San Francisco for Climate Ride. And if you don't know Climate Ride, you should get to know it if you're a listener. But they do a series of different group led bike tours that are raising money to help combat global warming. I used to say it was for global warming, and that gets misinterpreted. It's like sponsored by Mobile and Mobile Exxon.
Right.
Really good group. I mean, I, I learned a lot of things on that trip. The biggest thing that I learned is that I'm not very good in large groups for bike touring. And but I say that not as a knock against them. They did great job and they do great things. So if you've ever, if you've listened to the show or listened to my show, or you're ever considering doing a bike tour, this is a really cool way to get involved and kind of do something for the environment. If that's your thing, it's really cool. That was the first time I ever saw it. And I just fell in love with that area.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's such a great ride. And the cars all go slow. They're looking at trees. Hopefully they're looking at bikers at the same time, but there's enough of a shoulder there that it's all right.
Oh, but yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so nearby there is a section, a very famous section of that's an offshoot. Most people skip it because it's actually a very challenging ride. It's a lot of up and down, and it's not worse than Leggett Hill, which is the, if you're familiar with the Pacific Coast Ride, that's the big hill
right.
That's south of there. But this is...
that's the one, like, right before entering San Fran? Right?
No. Although that one kind of sucks. Yeah. that's the one, I think it's in Marin, or it's right before the bridge, maybe?
Yes.
Is that the one you're thinking
yeah.
of? Yeah. That one's just, it's super short, but it's super steep, too.
Yes.
And you're just sitting there going, all I want to do is get into that city. I see that bridge. Just let me
it's
go.
It's right there.
And,
it's right there.
And meanwhile, there's yes. cars going whizzing by you, and you're going up this, like, 10-degree grade. Yeah, that one, I'm not looking forward to that, but it's also nice because it's sort of like it's the last challenge before you get in the city. Leggett Hill is where you're on Highway 101 and you're transitioning to the beginning of the Pacific Coast Highway, California Highway 1. And it is the highest point on the entire West Coast for the bike tour. And it's not the worst hill, though, because there's a hill. And I think I talked about this last time I was on Sprocket. There's another little hill after that, and it has a name, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I curse it because
it's called the Fuck You Hill.
It's called the Fuck You Hill. It really is. There, man, we got.
Oh, I'm done. Oh, no, just kidding.
It's a giant middle finger to you. And what's worse is there's a book, you know, Biking the Pacific Coast Route or something like
yeah.
the Purple Book.
Yeah,
you guys
purple
probably
book.
Used
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah.
Well, they got the mileage markers wrong on it. Like off
oh, no
by
kidding.
A full effing mile. I discovered that this last time because and when you're on the middle finger hill and you're going along and you're like, I'm almost there, dude. I am almost there. And then you realize, nope, it's still going up and I should be going downhill by this point. Yeah, it's a big middle finger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to remember that this year because it's you've just done this really difficult hill and it's usually very hot. Because you're inland going to the coast.
Oh, right.
And it doesn't cool down until you get to the other side of that second Middle Finger Hill. It's going to be Middle Finger Hill now.
From now on,
it's
Middle Finger Hill.
But yeah, and it's steeper, and it's less, but it's steeper, and it just winds, and you're just begging for it to end, and yeah. But, I mean, compared to some of the other stuff on other routes, I mean, you know, what Brock's doing right now, I mean, he's doing real deal climbs and real deal heat.
Yeah.
So...
Currently, I think they're making their way into Washington. They have been in Missoula, Montana,
back,
and yeah. coming back this way. Got a dispatch from him, just a quick email from him yesterday, just saying, like, dude, Idaho is full of freaky people.
It is. I mean, all due respect to Idaho, but come on.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, you know, it's a classic fish out of water kind of situation.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
We're very sheltered in here in Portland, and we're around a lot of like-minded people,
yeah.
even though we all have sort of different opinions on things. You don't realize how much of a bubble Portland is until you go to leave Portland.
I agree.
That's actually...
I've done
you've
that.
You've got
yeah.
that perspective.
Yeah,
right,
I do.
Right.
I grew up on the East Coast, and then I lived here in Portland for about 5 years. I founded... a group called Columbia River Keeper, which is still kicking ass and taking numbers, which I'm very proud of.
Nice.
And I got an opportunity to teach back in D.C., teach law, and I was really that was too tempting for me. Even and then I gave up Portland, Oregon, and it's something I sort of regret in a lot of ways.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, how many people move away from Portland, Oregon? Do you know? Not many.
No, it's usually only by necessity.
It's by necessity yeah. generally. And it's funny because I've known so many people, my brother included, who have now moved here. And to a person, they're sort of like, so explain again why you decided to go to Washington, D.C. instead of out of Portland, Oregon. And I said, and I'll just shake and mumble and sort of point and say, look, a tiger. And then I run away. But yeah, no, it's Portland is, I've been doing this lately on my Twitter feed. I hashtag land of sunshine and bunnies. It just is. There's a dark side. There's stuff about Portland that isn't perfect. And I think, you know, anybody who's here knows that. But, you know, when you compare the lifestyle, the like-mindedness, especially if you get into the vibe, like so many, anybody who listens to this show and digs what's going on,
yeah,
Portland, Oregon is for you, let me just say. Yeah. And it's a very special place, and it's a very special group of people. It's a special community, and there's good things going on here. And what I like about it is that there's also a bit of, there's an activist streak to it as well. Nobody is satisfied with what it is. It can always be better.
It can always change.
It can always improve.
It can always be improved.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. You know, sometimes it can be annoying, you know, if you're always in sort of, it's like, okay, 2, 4, 6, 8, enter name of issue here. All right, that's cool, dude. But at the same time, I think that that's a really good thing because, you know, if we stop moving, we stop advancing, then there's a stagnation to it.
Sure.
And there's too many places that are like that. And it's great that Portland's not like that.
Right. Well, stagnation, you know, that breeds sort of a reactive form of change then, because, you know, you want to keep this status quo. You start fighting for the status quo as opposed to looking at the status quo. How can we improve this? How can we actively, proactively work on this before it becomes a problem or just before it falls apart?
Yeah. Land of sunshine bunnies, man. I'm telling you.
There have been a number of people who've written into us and have said, like, you know, because of you, I'm moving to Portland. And I think that's a bit of an overstatement. I'm sure that's a bit of an overstatement. I doubt it's just because of this podcast, but certainly we do our best to definitely put a bright spin here. I love this city, and I'm sure that comes out pretty apparent.
Next sponsor, you know. Oregon Board of Tourism.
There you go.
Just bookmark that.
Click.
It's funny, and also, you know, I think it's changed a lot because I think there are more people like you who have come into town from out of town. But when I moved here in 1996, I had never been called a foreigner, literally the word foreigner, in my own country until I moved to Portland.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny. That's bizarre to me.
It's interesting, and it's changed a lot because I think Portland has, I'll use the pejorative term, has been invaded by people who are not quote unquote natives. You would hear that. Yeah. I don't know if you still do, but
every now and then,
back in the mid 90s, you'd hear, oh, I love these trains.
Let's just take a moment.
Take a moment here for the train. Brought to you by Conrail. There we go. And that was brought to you by Conrail, bringing you your iPod touches and your
whatever's
artichokes
from
California.
Yeah.
And the California Agricultural Board. This is the sellout episode of the Sprocket Podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of sellout, I got a bank account today.
Whoa.
Yeah. I've gone almost 2 years without one. Actually, over 2 years.
That's
it would have been three this November.
I think I knew that about you, and I don't know why.
I made a big deal out of it.
I think
it
you
when
did,
I,
yeah.
When I finally, like, unplugged myself.
What prompted you? I'm going to assume that you were forced to get a bank account.
Yeah-ish.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I will say, well, forced maybe isn't the right term.
You were induced in a heavy-handed way.
There was a number of factors working against me. The biggest is that my employer switched banks. So they switched from a major giant conglomerate national bank to a smaller local bank. Great. Good for them. Kudos to them. However, that made it very inconvenient for me to be able to cash those checks.
No.
So, and they have one branch here in town.
Nowhere near you, I'm sure, right?
It's in the middle of downtown. I can't remember the name of the area now. Just one of those big office buildings down there. And I actually didn't mind the ride. You know, what is it? 6 miles maybe? You know, it was a good ride. And even in the rain, it wasn't terrible.
That's like an hour round trip to cash your check.
Yeah.
That's an hour of your time just to convert your payment into something you can actually
tangible,
use.
Tangible, usable, cash. Yeah, so there's that. And that's it. This is how small this bank is. They just have the one branch, and they are mostly, they have a few like personal accounts that they manage, but they mostly are for nonprofit organizations. That's their target customer, I guess.
Sounds like a cool bank, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you open an account with them? Is that?
I wanted to.
But you can't. That would defeat the purpose,
but
wouldn't it? Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if I pursued it a little bit more and been like, you know, hey, my employer is a customer of yours. You know, can you also, you know,
can
work
we do
something?
Direct deposit yeah. so I can don't have do to do something? An hour round trip, like just to cash this yeah. piece of paper that you yourself made?
That you guys issued. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was working against me. Another thing was, I'm almost reluctant to admit this, but Bike Scout is happening, which is a kind of a citywide bike scavenger hunt. It's put on by the same people who put on Film by Bike here.
Oh, cool!
And it's a really good time. I wasn't a part of it last year, but it ends at VeloCult, and I happened to be at VeloCult at the time that it ended, and. You know, it was just a really good time, and I was like, I want to be a part of this. Registration is online only, requiring a card
and,
of some kind.
And therefore, Aaron's got a bank account.
So I also helped a German friend of mine who is here on a work exchange set up a bank account so that, you know, she didn't have to wire money all the way over to Germany and then have this giant confusion with her check issued here in the States. How do we cash that?
Right.
Into
with extra
with
fees
her.
Assured. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And this bank, again, I haven't named a single bank yet. And
You've been very good.
Yeah. But this bank was very good to her. And they also manage a lot of local companies' money. And again, are very like personal, very small. It's a local bank. Because of that experience I had with her, it kind of was this thing, like I kept them in mind.
Right.
And so when I was backed up against this wall where I want to be a part of Bike Scout, you know, it's so dumb that it's just this one small event, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was sort of backed up against this wall, I was like, well, I know these guys treated her well and still are continually treating her well. Yeah, why not? I'll do it.
So if you're going to have to do it, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's and good.
Yeah, you know, I was never, banks are bad, banks are evil. Maybe I was, actually.
In many instances, they are bad and evil.
maybe I was.
That's for another show. Unless, of course, you'd like to be considering a sponsorship of Sprocket Podcast, in which case banks,
right,
if
this
for
the
right
the
price,
episode.
Will be excellent and not evil. It's the sellout edition of the Sprocket Podcast.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of, but, you know, there is a necessity given the way our capital system works. That
and everything's so electronic these days, too. I mean,
yeah,
money
exactly.
itself
That's
is
why.
Changing. I mean, doing what you've been doing for the last couple of years, 10 years ago, wouldn't have been as unusual or difficult to pull off.
Sure.
In the age of internet commerce and electronic payments and PayPal and whatnot. You kind of got to do it.
10 years from now, it'd be downright antisocial, if not already anti-American.
Exactly. Hey, we should say what we're drinking since we're both sort of like sipping at our
That's
beverages.
That's right. Yeah. I'm almost
because well, you got something new to the podcast, which
yes,
I think you should share.
I've never had this before. Yeah. I've never had this on the podcast before. Right. I've had this before, but from Stumptown Coffee Roasters, local roaster here.
We like them.
Most of you know. They have a cold brew that they will distribute to different places. I've had it a couple times. VeloCult used to carry them. I don't know if they still do now. But anyways, yeah, grabbed that. It's very tasty. It's got that sort of chocolatey sweetness that cold brews have, but still has that I don't know any other way to explain it, but just sort of it's got a very Portland taste to it. It's got this kind of bite, this really earth, down to earth.
It's got like, that kind of hippie vibe to it, you know?
It's maybe
cool,
it's
man.
So.
It tastes like the second Andy Warhol's record. It's
there
real
you go.
Good.
Yes, yes.
Stumptown rules, okay? Brought to you by the Dandy Warhols and the Auditorium.
Actually, Brock is a huge fan of the Dandy Warhols.
As am I. I did not know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got me turned on to them, actually.
I really dig them. And it's funny, because I was here during their sort of... their rise, their great rise. So, you know, they would play at some of the old places that don't exist anymore. That it's kind of sad, but you know, it's all right. But you know, now they're touring. You know, they're still big. They come to DC a lot. So, you know, I'll be the jerk in the front row going, you know, I lived in Portland when you were there. Courtney Taylor Town. Yeah, yay. I'm that guy.
And what do you got?
I've got Hopworks Urban Brewery, or Hub as it is. And I got the organic Hub Lager Pounder, because I decided to go for quantity and quality.
There you go.
And by the way, this sip is from Logan and Shadowfoot. This one, this sip is coming from you.
That's right.
If you know what I'm talking about, you've listened to the ends of Sprocket Podcast quite frequently.
Yeah. This. So before Brock left, he charged up a card to a local establishment right up the road from the studio, Beer Mongers. And so, yeah, these drinks are thanks to you guys.
Thank you to the continuing sponsors, which I need to join at some point.
Oh, whenever. You're a guest right now.
Yeah,
so
it's cool.
Don't worry about it. Well, shit, what else should we talk about here?
I don't know.
Oh, I've got one.
Okay.
So this probably should be in the headlines section, but I don't have it written up in front of me.
Oh, I thought you were going to play the headlines.
I'm going to. Okay. I'm going to.
And can you please play the You've Got or We've Got Mail sound? I'm a guest. I've asked
all right.
for it. I specifically requested it. You're
Wait a
welcome,
minute. Do you have a writer or something here? Yeah. Get out the M&Ms for you?
You're welcome, Sprocket Podcast listeners.
All right. So, headlines.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light. Pedal just as fast as the legs will let us.
All right. I'm not there. There. Well, that wasn't quite a slow fade.
The Kellys gave you a lot of props for your fade in the last episode.
That one was easy. All I had to do was move the iPod away from the microphone.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you did the physical fade. This one was a little more difficult because you actually have it hooked up.
Yeah.
Again, you're welcome, Sprocket Podcast listeners.
I don't know if that bass is as loud for you guys listening as it is for us in the...
It was thumping, and I actually learned more lyrics to the song, because normally it fades out much sooner.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Pedal as fast as your legs will allow us, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I miss that all the time. That's great.
So I don't have it right here in front of me, but this has been all over the Twitters. The Washington Post.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm going to ask you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so this guy whose name I will bring up in a second.
It doesn't matter. He is dead to us. one of the columnists.
One of the columnists from the Washington Post writes a piece just basically advocating harassment of cyclists in the D.C. area.
Worse. I mean, I would also say worse. Physical violence against them. If you haven't read the piece, I would really recommend that you do it, because it's something that's been happening in DC lately, and I feel like that sort of the bikes versus cars meme has been everywhere.
Yes.
In the last 6 to 12 months, it's become worse in the DC area. DC has become, in the last, say, 5 years or so, a pretty excellent biking city, because there's a lot more bikers out there. It's a great way to get around town. They've done that trick where they sort of race a car versus a bike to get to from one place to the other, and the bike just smashes, you know, just really does well.
DC is pretty much, especially during rush hours, it's stuck in gridlock.
Oh, it's awful traffic. So what's been happening is there have been a lot of people out there who get a little aggravated about bikers and their presence. And this particular gentleman, you know, taps into all of that, but at the same time he says two things in this piece that I think really set a lot of us off in the hashtag Bike DC community, right?
Yes.
Number one, the law in the district is if a vehicle hits a bike, there is essentially a $500 fine. That's basically the worst that can happen to you as a driver. And so this gentleman suggests that...
So something to the effect of vehicular manslaughter does not play...
Yeah, it doesn't really happen.
Intriguing.
And as an attorney, I should probably qualify that by saying I'm not familiar with the actual DC statutes involved here.
Okay.
I assume that, I would hope, that there is at least some kind of a vehicular code in that. But knowing the reality is that in most of these sort of car on bike or car, you know, car and bike kind of accident situations, the worst that ends up happening is sort of a slap on the wrist and a small, very small fine. And the gentleman who wrote this piece suggested that because all of these flagrant scofflaw bully, he used the word bully bikers, are doing all these terrible things, that someday some cars, just some drivers, just going to say, you know what, screw it, $500 is worth it, into the biker.
Right.
That was bad enough. That was, to me, was sort of like, you know, you're being hyperbolic, you know, you're a columnist, you're trying to. The next thing, though, really bothered me, because without being as hyperbolic, he suggested in another sentence very close to that, you know, a person who's riding a bike, and please forgive me because I don't remember the exact quotation on this, but
I'm looking for it as you're
that it would be okay to take a broomstick and put it into the wheel of a biker, and that would be okay, that's worth it, that's justice. And it was just kind of amazing. And it's interesting because it came only about a week or two after a much less publicized thing. Scott Simon from NPR, if you're an NPR listener, you may know him. He kind of said, you know, he was walking with his daughters, I guess, in D.C., and some biker came too close for his comfort to him and his daughters. And he basically said all bikers are bad and all this other stuff.
No. Dang it.
This is different.
No, that's something from NBC News.
Oh, okay.
And then that was actually just an advertisement that's attached to it, of course.
So there's a Scott Simon thing, there's this, and, you know, the Scott Simon thing was surprising because he seems to be a thoughtful kind of guy, and there was a lot of blowback because he doubled down on it and then got really pissed off in his responses. And so a lot of us were sort of like, dude, can't we just share the road? I mean, you know, yes, there are a-hole bikers out there, but there are a-hole car people too, and there are a-hole pedestrians. It's just...
There are a-holes around. Cortland Malloy.
Speaking of assholes, Cortland Malloy. You know, the explicit tag, by the way, is well deserved on this episode.
Right. I don't think it's out of line to say this person's name. He's a public columnist.
Oh, absolutely. He's
published this. Yeah. It's not like we're advocating any. We're just saying this is the guy who wrote this.
I, unlike him, would not suggest that his car should blow up while he drives it.
That would be bad.
That would be wrong, because that's and
that
that's
also
what's
doesn't
so,
that that yeah that doesn't help.
That's what's so frustrating about this piece. And, you know, I don't mind someone using you know, I'm not the type of person who wants to slap an explicit sticker on a or blame a rock band for the violence that causes, you know, from their art, you know. But this wasn't somebody being artistic. This was somebody who was being hyperbolic and was suggesting things that some more unhinged people out there might say, hey, I think I am going to carry a broomstick with me and send a biker flying. It's
and
kind
I,
of
I get that
scary.
You know, we have freedom of speech. We have freedom of the press for a reason.
Absolutely.
I get that.
He has every right to make his opinion, but he should get his opinion weighed in the public and should be criticized if it is wrong.
Well, but for example, going into a crowd and yelling fire,
right,
and causing a panic, that's where the line of free speech, you know, that's where the line is drawn.
Welcome to the First Amendment podcast starring Aaron.
That's right. I'll be the first to admit I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I know the very, very basics of the Constitution.
I took 2 semesters of constitutional law in law school. I am effectively the expert of the room.
All right. Yes. Wonderful. So, yeah, at some point, if you're advocating violence or even suggesting violence towards a person or people group, are you not violating? Aren't we? And I'm just going to leave that as a question hanging. Yeah. Aren't we violating First Amendment free speech?
Well, the First Amendment is only about the federal government and what it can do regarding speech. So the Washington Post is free to say this. The Washington Post is free to print that. It's only the government that is prohibited from doing something in the First Amendment. So that's the first thing I'd say. Wow. Hey, my con law professor would be really happy. But I think that what I get worried just from the perspective of what is useful in today's chatter, today's discussion. We are all have to share our roots into we're talking about DC, into DC. In and out.
Well, we could take this as a microcosm. If it's happening in DC, you're pretty sure it's going to happen other places.
Yeah, I think it's irresponsible. I can totally grok to rock a little Vulcan here on you. We started with nerds, we'll end with nerds, right? I don't agree with his position. I understand where he's coming from. His suggestion is he sees a lot of people on bikes who are creating problems for him as a driver and therefore the rest of his stuff. What I think is irresponsible on his part is to suggest that
the solution is violence.
Or to even mention it. I'm going to be a little fair here that I assume that he was not a direct advocate for violence in this. However, he should, as an adult writer of prose in one of the great newspapers of the United States of America,
someone right. who's the Washington Post isn't some local one person.
Nor
operation.
This is the type of thing I would expect to see on the sorry Syracuse, but on the comment section of Syracuse.com. this is the type of mentality that you see in a comment section. This isn't the type of professional opinion that you would see. That being said, let's also just talk a little bit about what newspapers are meant to do. They're supposed to sell newspapers and they're supposed to drive dialogue. And what are we doing? We're talking about it.
Okay.
So,
well, I might contest that point.
Oh, I think that's fine, but this is not a proper way to do it. I think that there's a line that is crossed.
Sure.
And this is one of them.
Sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, what is the role of newspapers? Is it really just to sell papers?
No, it's to wrap fish.
Okay.
And just start fires on bike tours.
There you go.
Well, not like big fires, but camp fires.
Yeah, this is maybe a bigger, more philosophical question. Like, and maybe it's the difference between newspapers and strict journalism, you know?
Yeah.
Journalism, again, I'm not the most learned person in the room. Or in the next five
that
rooms.
That is probably not true.
But thank you. But journalism, you know, you're there to inform. You're there to report on what you see happening.
And columnists are meant to give opinions. That's their
sure.
rule. Sure. And this is an opinion. It is a bad opinion. It is an opinion of someone who has a point of view but went about it in the wrong. I would say your opinion is fine. I disagree with it. I think the way that you went about expressing it was beneath the role that you hold as a columnist for one of the great newspapers of the United States of America. That's all. That's sort of my point of view.
No,
and I would
that
say
is,
that to his face.
That is so great. I love how you continually assume best intentions on this guy.
Well,
at least good intentions.
I'm glad you said that, but it makes me feel like that I'm a
you don't necessarily agree with what he's saying or how he's saying it, but you're at least going, okay, I understand why he's saying
it. I value dissent. I value people that don't agree with me. I can disagree with them, you know, and it's funny. I've had so
many.
And
that's why I live in Portland.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Because then you don't have to worry about it. Because
we all are like-minded individuals and we all live in this happy bunny bubble.
And it's true. The land of sunshine and bunnies, but yep. only between May and October, because then it's the land of clouds and rain and bunnies.
That's
besides the point. I will say, I will also say we know that there are listeners to the Sprocket podcast that don't agree with everything that happens on this show, yet they still listen to it because they value the point of view. And I think that that's very cool. Now, I will say this guy, I don't really value it. I don't think that I think he went about it in a completely unprofessional way. I'm actually kind of horrified that the Washington Post editorial staff said that broomstick analogy. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Print. Send.
This isn't going to bite us in the ass.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, I mean, like I said, their job is to sell papers. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed on a lot of news sites, but I'm seeing a whole lot of, you know, housewives of this and, you know, I can't even remember some of these names, the Kardashians that, and I'm just sort of like, why is this on CNN?
How is this news? How is,
and it's all on the bottom, and it's, because you had mentioned journalism earlier, and this is journalism and opinion, you know, there's crossover. We have opinion shows. We have our Foxes. We have our MSNBCs where there's opinion shows.
At no point would I call myself a journalist either.
No.
This is a podcast.
This has got opinion and lifestyle and things like that. And I think that it's successful because it champions a worldview. And I was at a conference. I'm at a conference here, World Domination Summit in Portland. And yesterday there was
that's going on right now.
Right now, sir.
Oh, holy shit!
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yesterday we did a thing. It was mostly about blogging, but there was one guy who got up there and talked about, you know, his entire 10 minutes was about championing your worldview, and when you do that, you'll be more successful. And I was thinking about all of the different things that are out there that I enjoy, like this show. And this show champions its worldview. It's got at the top of the show, you read what it's all about, you know, simplifying the good life and all of those other things. And, you know, you can still have conversations and you can still have dissent and we can still talk about this jerk in D.C. and I can be very kind to him and say he's welcome to his opinion, even though I disagree with it and blah, blah, blah. But championing a worldview, I think, is a hugely positive thing. We all now with podcasts and the internet, we can all seek those places with those champions for what we agree with and sort of, you know,
learn more, get behind it. Yes, there's other people in the world that do this.
Totally. Yeah. And even if it's just 100 people or 1,000 people or whatever, it's cool because, you know, hey, these are like-minded people. You know, we like the Dandy Warhols.
This will be your new project now.
I was going to say.
Pedal Shift / Dandy Warhols. All right. Y'all ready for this? Here it comes.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
You're welcome, Sprocket Podcast listeners.
All right. So first off, from Dan in Portland. This is not my brother, Dan. He says, hey, Aaron, great work as the stand-in host. Last few shows have been great, and I've had some really interesting reactions from pedestrians as I ride by laughing out loud. That must be the episode with the Kellys then.
I'm sure.
My brother, sister, and I have been discussing starting a podcast recently. If we start it, it will fall on me to produce and upload the episodes. I was wondering if you'd be willing to let me sit in on recording and or production of an episode so that I can see how it's done before I start trying to accomplish it on my own. Hoping you're enjoying your week. Thanks, Dan. And
it's sort of like watching sausage being made. I'm, as a podcast producer myself, I'm not sure if that would be something to induce you to create a podcast or not, regardless. and this is no diss against you or the Sprocket Podcast production facilities, which are gorgeous.
My first response to him, and we've had a few emails actually back and forth, but I've thought this one was worth, just putting out there in the podcast sphere. But my first email back to him was like, well, if you love your siblings, don't podcast with them. But in all honesty, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a bit of work. And I've already mentioned to Dan, if you're interested, come down. We'll arrange a time and I'll show you how it's done.
Do it, Dan. It's fun.
Yeah. So this next mail is from my brother, Dan. I find this hilarious, but I think it's only because I know my brother and it has to do with knowing my family as well. He wrote it somewhat in a conversation that he had. Some background information from this is my brother lived in Afghanistan for a while. He was, working really closely with a lot of translators and interpreters. And one translator he got very friendly with, and he's actually sponsoring him to come over as a political refugee, basically. So him and his family are coming over. They're actually going to live with my mom.
Oh, wow.
No less. Yeah. Anyways, here's a conversation. Here's what my brother wrote as a sort of preamble to this conversation. Would you like to play the part Tim of Bob?
Or I will play the part of Bob the Afghan. Yes. Okay. Yes, I will.
Okay.
And I think it'll be funnier that way as yes. Bob the Afghan. So
the preamble is, my brother writes, Bob the Afghan, a friend of mine, asked on Facebook to name his child, and I was kidding with my suggestions. Well, lesson learned. I just had this conversation.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? How is your family?
The Civ guys talk to Freddy Vesquales.
How is your new baby?
Nice.
That's also Dan's reply to this. He says, nice. And?
Good. Do you his name Beto? Do you like his name Beto?
It's pronounced Beto, but Beto. I'll tell you why in a second. And what? You named your child Beto?
Yeah, Mexican name.
Yes, but it is a Mexican name. It's a short name for Humberto or Herberto.
Yeah.
Okay, did you really name your kid Beto?
Yeah, because you choose this name to him.
Oh, thanks, man.
Not problem. I love you, buddy.
I love you too, man. Does that name work in Dari and Pashto? By the way, those are two languages spoken over there. Does it mean something in Dari or Pashto?
Yeah.
What does it mean, Beto?
Means son.
His name is son.
Yeah, it has many meanings. Same time, it means nice.
So you named your child Nice? I guess that works. It's also a Mexican name. I can't wait till he comes to the U.S.
Hey, bro, we'll give you a call from Skype tomorrow.
Okay.
I did go to a little accent on the last one. I apologize.
No, that's all right.
Just because it started with, hey, bro.
Yeah, so kind of joke gone wrong.
I think so, yeah. This has been Sprocket Podcast Theater starring
Tim Mooney and Aaron Flores. So some of the background is Beto is my dad's name.
There you go.
and he's never liked it, like, since he's become a U.S. citizen, since he's moved to the U.S., he's never liked that name. And in fact, before having any kids, he had this conversation with my mom once about, like, he's never going to name his kids after him. Of course, has his firstborn son, has to have a junior. Anyway, my brother Tito, we call him Tito. He's named after my dad. But again, like...
Not Tito Jackson.
No.
That's too bad.
Although...
He is my favorite of the Jacksons after Michael.
Yes.
Yeah.
But named after my dad. We don't call him Alberto. We call him Tito. It's not a very common Mexican name in America. You know, when you're thinking of Mexican names, you think of, like, you know, Juan or Jose or
sure.
You know. Sure. So anyways, yeah, all that background, it makes it a little funny for us in the family that my brother, as a joke, suggests a pejorative or at least a shortened version of my dad's name. And then this guy took it. And so now his son is named after, I hope this never gets to this guy.
it means son in one of the Afghani
in
languages.
Either Dari or Pashto. He didn't specify one.
The world shrinks every day. That's all I have to say. This is the kind of crossover we have because of all of the things happening in the world. That's amazing.
I kind of want to name my kid's son now. Just
why not?
If I ever have a kid. And this is maybe a good reason why I shouldn't have children.
Some people name their daughter's Mantle after Mickey Mantle. I mean, how different is that, really?
Or what was that? That episode of Seinfeld where...
Yeah, I think it was that was it.
Seven.
Oh,
I think it was.
Seven or six or whatever the number. Yeah. Sorry, not a baseball fan as much. So,
No, me neither. Lastly, from our favorite writer in person, Johnny K down in Florida, says, I'm not sure if you noticed this, but the ladies were really loud. I did notice this, unfortunately, in post-production. Not much I can do about it.
Levelator.
I thought I had the levels right. You know, you just get into it and we're all having a good time.
Oh, I have software. I have a free software. It's called Levelator. That's
Oh, really?
Yes.
It'll just compress the...
It makes it all good. Drop it and it's done.
Even though, like, you know, for example, in that episode, we had Hugh, who was very quiet, and he would be always biking away from
Hugh
the microphone.
Hugh will get boosted.
He would end up getting boosted, yeah, even though it's automated. All one track.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I'll be damned. Yeah, I'm going to steal that from you. I mean, I'm going to purchase.
No, it's free. Software. In fact, they stopped developing it. They don't. It's not even been developed anymore. But it's
so I do have to take it from you, basically.
You must.
All right. Well, again, you backed me against the wall.
You're welcome, Sprocket Podcast listeners.
So anyways, he continues to write, by the way, it is so hot here in Florida that not even the mosquitoes come out. The mosquitoes only come out early in the mornings and late at night in the afternoons as the sun is coming up or going down. But the mosquitoes are out to get you and don't want you to be out there. That's for sure. Let's just say that battery-powered electrified tennis rackets to sweat. Oh, we use... There we go. We use battery-powered electrified tennis rackets to swat the beasts. I've heard of small animals and children being taken off by the creatures and cattle with their blood completely drained due to these pests. And here I thought it was aliens.
Looking over your shoulder, I can see that he capitalized it. Mosquito is with a capital M. Those are serious insects.
In reference to our continual consternation of Star Trek, he chimes in. In the movie Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, Sulu was captain of his very own ship. So yes, Sulu, as a pilot, would be in line for the captaincy. Anyways, you can wiki this. And he sent us some links for the wiki entries referencing that. So I'll post that for everybody to enjoy. And as for the line of succession for President of the U.S., he sent us also a Wikipedia entry on that. Okay, honestly, when looking up the information about Star Trek, it made me go further than any man would ever want to go, pun intended, as I found some really strange site, and I'll post a link to that. I did find information, but it was a rabbit hole that I would just wish soon stay out of. People get way too serious about Star Trek religion.
As an aside, if you don't follow George Takei, thank you. You can call me expensive, he says, because Takei is Takei in which is the correct pronunciation?
I thought it was Takei.
I think Takei is expensive in Japanese.
Okay.
And he is George Takei. And when people call him George Takei, he goes, you can call me expensive. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you're missing something. He is an American. He is a delight.
I will go do that.
He's a delight.
Well, I guess this is it, huh?
I think so.
All right. Hey, guess what? This is a crossover episode. So when you're done listening to this, head on over to the Pedal Shift.
Pedal Shift Project. You can check it out at pedalshift.net. And I'm going to be interviewing Aaron so you can learn more about Aaron and his relationship with bike touring. So that'll be fun.
Do you want to do the outro?
Sure.
Awesome.
We're going to hit the mark on this too. We're going to hit the mark.
We've missed it the last couple of
episodes.
No,
we're hitting the mark.
All right, closing theme brought to you by Tim Mooney.
And the Ford Motor Company. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics or guests. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message or text 503-847-9774. That probably spells something. I don't know what it is. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing the theme music, Hurtbird for the headline sounder, and the sustaining donors go Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katharina, Melengard, Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, and Terra Firma.
We did it!
We hit the mark!
Have fun, everybody.
Brush your teeth.
Go to bed. Oh, this has been still recording this whole time. Well, all right.
We can edit.
A Sprocket Studios production.